This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
And we're going to continue right now with part two. Welcome, everybody. If you were listening last week, if not, go back and listen to last week's episode. But we are doing our year in review, talking about some of the biggest things to happen in comics, board games, and pop culture, according to what we can remember. So I won't do the full-on introduction here. We're just going to dive right into it so we can get to as much as we can before we get to the end of the episode here. So,
and a couple reminders as we talk about comics and board games today. They're all available to buy right during this podcast or this live stream. If you're watching on Facebook or Twitch, just simply post in the comments, and we will contact you through those mediums and make arrangements for sales. It's as simple as us sending you a PayPal invoice, or if you're a local fan, just stopping by the store once we know you want the merchandise. So that's something we're going to be heavily incorporating into what we do moving forward, into our board game streams, into our comic shows that are coming up on a weekly basis, and just something that's as easy as that. So
excellent.
We're opening this episode though with a pop culture moment, and Brad, do you have another one?
One that comes to mind, and I hope I'm not taking one of yours, is the out of nowhere impact that Black Panther had. I mean, we are.
As you said, things we could remember.
Yes.
We were about 20 movies. I believe he is the 20th movie or 19th of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And kind of put it in February where they're just like, well, we'll try it. Exploded is in the top, six or five of all time international combined box office. Yeah. And just, we find out representation matters. It did not hurt that it was an amazingly well-told, well-shot, well-acted story. Mm-hmm. But this is Marvel's first foray into featuring predominantly characters of color. And it just, blew up. If you watch Black Panther, take a 10-minute break, put in Avengers Infinity War. It's set in Wakanda, sure, but they really did not see this movie becoming what it was, because they kind of treat them as tertiary characters. They're like, oh, let's just go to Wakanda and blow it up, And these characters are, they're in there, and it is their voice, but they were so underrepresented for what they became in Avengers Infinity
War. Yeah, I'm sure if they could have reshot it, they would have done that, but it was 2 months later. That's a really good point, because in Infinity War, it almost feels like the Battle on Naboo at the end where, on the ground, know what I mean? It's very similar. There's a force field, there's an incoming army, and the Wakandans are sort of like the fodder for the troops, I'm not trying to compare them to Gungans, that's a terrible, but I'm saying that, but the setup is like that, is all I'm saying. So
you saw people going to die?
I love Black Panther. He's one of my all-time favorite characters. Incredibly,
I will say you make a good point about this too, because I don't even know that it was only people of color. My future nephew is. One of the first questions I ever asked him when I met him was, "Who's your favorite superhero?" And this was a year before that movie came out, and he said Black Panther. And we've had kids come into the store, little boys, say the same exact thing. I think the armor is just really cool in the movie, But yeah, you're not wrong. That box office is absolutely driven by that representation. And here's the thing. In Marvel Comics, people got really upset over a comic called Black Panther and the Crew. And they tried to claim, David Gabriel even alluded to this comment about retailers, it didn't sell because retailers were racist. Well, it didn't sell because Marvel didn't promote it. They promoted the Black Panther movie to the audience that they wanted to go to it. A book like Black Panther and the Crew, which was the third Black Panther comic to come out at the time, how many copies did you expect to sell of it, no matter what it was called? And it was not pushed to an African-American or colored audience in any way. It was simply just released and died, and that was it. So there was no support for it whatsoever, whereas the movie is sort of like the perfect storm of everything, I think.
Well, and one thing that is really striking about the movie is that it's, like you were saying, it's well acted, it's well done. It is just a good piece of media, of entertainment, of art. But it's also very appropriate for our day and age. It's one of those things that it feels, and time will tell, of course, but it does feel more timeless. Like the things that they hit on are very relevant right now, like especially relevant. But it doesn't feel like 10 years from now you'll watch it and just be like, oh, this is so dated.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really well done story, and just all around, from the writing, directing, acting, everything, editing. You know, don't want to forget those guys.
But I think the goal was to make a good movie.
Well, that's just it.
The goal was to make a good movie before anything else. And that was one of the comparison movie for me is the female Ghostbusters movie of 2016, right?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That movie was made to put four women in the Ghostbusters suits before it was made to make a good movie out of it.
Right.
And you can tell, because that's what came out. I'm not a fan of that movie, and I think that I would love it if it was a fantastic movie, and I'm glad that there are women who really liked it and felt that was an important thing to do, but that was not a good movie first. It was a representation movie first, and that's the difference between these two success and failures.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I think that's the point of it, though, is that you can just aim to make something that's good.
Yep.
But you can also make it, you know, relevant on another level.
I mean, and Brad, there are podcasters, YouTubers all over the place who want to jump all over anything that's with, you know, SJW, or I guess it's NPC now, right?
Yep.
But I didn't see a lot of that over Black Panther because the movie was good, so everybody had to shut up. Was basically what it boiled down to, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like, to me, it Marvel was probably planning on it to be another Ant-Man. They're like, this is going to be middle of the road. That's kind of, you know, if you go back and look at their budget, they weren't throwing, you know, the $200 million budget at it. They were just like, okay, we'll give it Ant-Man level money. And it just destroyed everything. And I think that took Marvel, you know, like they had people like, oh, we'll just drop it in February. You know, Deadpool kind of did all right the previous February. Let's try a February movie. And it just, is huge.
Look what they've done, though. Look at how they have taken characters that are from different corners of the Marvel Universe that should appeal to a different group of people, and then they have blown them up into these... Like, Guardians of the Galaxy is a completely different thing than Doctor Strange, and so on and so forth, right? They have... Doctor Strange isn't one of their most successful ones. I'm not saying, you know, but just the difference in the topics. And I think they're about to do it again with Captain Marvel. That movie is just going to be... Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's... I'm a little worried that movie's not going to be as good as some of these other ones, but it's going to make a ton of money, and once again, it'll be funny. Like, you've pointed this out on the podcast that Black Panther made more money than the Justice League movie, you know? And that's not a criticism of Black Panther or in any way, or it's how could you have botched it so bad? Superman, Batman, Flash, Green Lantern, so on and so forth, or not Green Lantern, oops. Superman, Batman, Flash, Wonder Woman.
He was in it in the very beginning, but it wasn't, you know, one of the Earth
Green Lanterns. And you couldn't make money with that.
Oh, yeah. Movie. Yeah, this is a character where if you take the common moviegoer prior to Black Panther, they could name you Black Panther. They would not have been able to tell you any of the other
movies.
That's
the guy from the
members.
Winter Soldier movie. Right?
Yeah.
All right, board game time.
I'm going to throw this out just to make sure I've got time to do it. But this is another 2017 game that I didn't find until just this year, and it has very quickly risen to the top of my list. You've heard me talk about it relentlessly. I've interviewed the designer twice on the podcast. It's Spirit Island. Spirit Island is absolutely one of the best board games I have ever played. It takes the concept that so many board games do, which is settlers colonizing a land, and flips it on its head by saying that the colonists are the enemy, and taking this wonderful, very rich lore of this island where there are still spirits. It's this alternate history kind of earth where there are things that are very familiar. One of your adversaries can be the Kingdom of England, and they colonize in a way that you would expect England to colonize, but you are playing as the spirits on this island that are trying to stop these colonists from coming in and ravaging your lands and destroying your connection to the earth and weakening you. And every single spirit plays differently. They play thematically. So when you are playing the lightning spirit, you feel like you're playing the lightning spirit. He's fast. He strikes hard and quick. Whereas if you're playing the river, you're playing to push things around. You're flooding. You're moving things. It's so tight in all of its mechanics, in all of its theme, and it's just so, so good. I cannot recommend it enough. And for me, you know, it scratches all of my itches. It is a cooperative game, so if you don't like co-op games, I don't know it's necessarily going to change your mind about them, but it plays very well because there is such an intricate puzzle to manage. It gets rid of the alpha player problem where one person can't just dictate the actions of the entire table. If you try, your brain will explode. And for me, that's excellent because my brain tries a lot of times and I have to restrain myself in other games. This one, I have to pay attention to what I'm doing and maybe a little bit of the general board state and point things out to people, but I can't dictate everyone's hand.
Which brings us on to our next point, game, Exploding Brains.
Yeah. So, yes, Spirit Island, if you haven't played it, I recommend it heavily. It's so, so good.
Available right now for 10% off at Paradox. If you're watching this, you can, again, you can post in comments. I can PM you PayPal invoices, or you can come down and pick it up at Paradox. We'll work it out. So
yes.
Darren.
Okay, so for my next comic, Green Lantern, Grant Morrison, and art by Liam Sharp. This is a little bit of a cheat. We were talking about the Batman Who Laughs earlier. The only one issue out.
Oh, no, it's that good.
Like, yeah. Well, two issues of Green Lantern, to be honest. I've only read the first one. I haven't read the second one yet. But just by the name alone, Grant Morrison and Liam Sharp, I was going to buy this book, and when I read it, and it was cool. I'm not really into superheroes as much as I was when I was younger, but I really enjoyed this. It's just... How do I say it? It's just so wacky, but kind of cool. And, you know, like, Rich and I were talking about Liam's art and the character designs and just how otherworldly they are. And I'm looking through it now, and it reminds me, in some respects, sort of the more, you know, the kind of the alien worlds, it reminds me of stuff I was looking at when I was reading 2000 AD, which I believe Liam Sharp did work for 2000 AD when he was younger. But then you look at some of the other scenes, and they look like comics from the 70s, but in a really good way. And like in a, you know, like then you know, you kind of like looking at the language of the comic from that era, but kind of a little bit more sophisticated as well. And I did read the Green Lantern Rebirth, and it was absolutely terrible. I just could not read it. But this is great. I mean, it's Grant Morrison. It's a little bit, you know, like I say, it's wacky. I don't fully understand what's going on, but I just love
it's
it for what it.
Morrison.
Yeah, but I just love it. I'm just going for the ride, you know. I'm kind of like looking through it, and you know, just the character designs are just so cool.
There's this awesome interrogation scene in the second issue where it's with a spider on the what is the captured thing, and it's Hal in like a bird like. Green Lantern, and the spider says something to Hal like, yeah, I hate you humans, and Hal is like, yeah, well, I hate spiders, you know, it's just like, it's then he explains that it's instinct, but then he goes on to explain that it's instinctual for them to hate each other because of what they are, and I'm just like, there's something that was just awesome about the interchange between the two characters, and the whole comic, you nailed my thought of, it reminds me of a 1970s space comic. I keep thinking of the Star Wars comics right after the first six issues of Marvel Star Wars adapted the movie, the first movie. And they're really cool because they were made only based on like the storyboards and stuff like that. So there's stuff that's wrong. They have the wrong color for the lightsabers and other things like that. You know, and they got the license before the movie came out, and were making the comics before the movie hit the stands.
Oh, wow.
You know, so but then starting in issue 7, they did original stories, and there's Jackson, and there's all these weird things in this story called 7 Against the Galaxy, and like this Green Lantern thing is taking me back to being like 8 years old and getting Star Wars comics, and it's just like, it's just weird, and it's big. The galaxy is huge, you know, and there's pirates, and there's weird aliens, and there's weird Green Lanterns that aren't just humanoids, you know, and I mean, it's fantastic. I love it. I mean, I hope that all 12 issues are the treat that the first two issues have been of this book, so.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading the rest. I just haven't had time to read issue 2, but I will do soon. So yeah, Green Lantern, we do have this stocked by Grant Morrison. Issues 1 and 2 are available. If you want something cool and wacky, you know, and beautifully drawn, you know, this is the book for you. So, yeah.
Definitely the book to add. So, I mean, I got a couple of things. I think we want to head towards, because we have one big one for pop culture stuff that we want to like end up talking about, probably.
Yeah, so, probably.
But let's talk about Marvel Comics a little bit. There's two aspects to this. First, I want to say again, we did our first episode about it, but you know, Stan Lee passed away 6 weeks ago, something like that. And Brian, we haven't had you on to hear your thoughts about Stan Lee and Marvel, you know, and Stan Lee's Marvel Comics.
I guess. So, well, yeah.
You're on the spot. Go. Yeah.
Everything I read as a kid was, you know, his groundwork. Even the Image stuff, like the founders of Image, I don't think you can find a single one of them that would say, I never read a Stan Lee book. You know, he's as close to a godfather of comics as I think we'll find. I mean, yes, he did not work for one of the two major houses, but he created books, worked on so many books that touched so many people, and, you know, let's be fair, probably 90% of every American-born comic book creator currently working is probably a direct result of something fantastic of his that they read as a kid, and he's going to be missed. Everybody's probably going to get a little teary-eyed when they see his cameo in Endgame, because that's been confirmed.
Yeah.
But that will be the last time we see Papa Stan. So, he's going to be sorely missed. But I think, you know, his fingers are still going to be in everything that you read. He's still out there. His goodwill, his charm, his wit is going to be in everything you're still reading, because he influenced everybody that you're reading.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I'm after we did the podcast, and there's a book that I'd been wanting to read for a while, and I just kind of just forgotten about it. But when Stan Lee passed away, I was reminded of it, and it's called Marvel Comics: The Untold Story. It's by Sean Howe. I got a copy for myself through the shop, and we've got another one coming for the shop. But it is I've read like 50, 60 pages, and it is a fascinating read. I wish I'd have read it before we did the Stan Lee podcast. Hmm. I mean, keep meaning to talk to you about it, Rich. I think you should read it as well. Marvel Comics: The Untold Story, and it starts right at the beginning of Martin Goodman, who was the publisher of Marvel Comics. How he started. He was a Russian immigrant, or a son of a Russian immigrant, and it builds all the way through how the company sort of developed, and you know, Captain America in the 40s, and then I'm right up to the 60s now, and that story, and what, you know, I mean, whether it's true or not, or what the things they said about the different creators, the staff, Stan Lee, that's as interesting, if not more so, than any Marvel book I've ever read. So I just want to say, and we're going to be stocking that book as well. So, and I think you should read it, Rich, as well.
And it's prose.
It is all prose. Okay. Yes.
I only read pictures. the other thing I want to touch on with Marvel, though, is I just in the current terms is there is this Fresh Start initiative, it was a heck of a year for Darren and I. You know, we got to meet a bunch of creators in person. We got to see CB Sapolsky and Jason Aaron and all kinds of stuff. But you know, and over the summer, as Fresh Start was laying out, especially back in like May, April, May, and June, we had quite a few successes. Some of the relaunches, like Avengers, were very strong sellers and things like that. And I think we're not a year later, but one of the things we said at the beginning was Fresh Start. It was meant to be just that. It wasn't meant to be the be all end all solution to all sales problems. It was more meant to clear the air from the problems that had existed previously. And I think, you know, there are some. One of the things I think that I can look back on Fresh Start after 9 months or so is I would say by and large there's better product being made today than there was then. I definitely have some issues with things like I'll tell you my most disappointing one, but in general a lot of good comics have come out. And I think, you know, if you're not reading The Immortal Hulk, you're missing one of comics' absolute best comics being published right now. This book is just absolutely phenomenal. It's part horror book, but it's also everything you want from a classic Marvel hunting for the Hulk book. And the story structure that Al Ewing puts into the issues is just amazing. He's really proving to be one heck of a writer. I mean, he already has. Al Ewing is a very good writer, but I just think he's really done something extra special with Immortal Hulk. So that's what I want to mention. Venom, obviously. I think Nick Spencer's amazing. Spider-Man is strong. Jason Aaron has really got something big going on Avengers and with Thor. There's a lot of the cornerstone books. The Fantastic Four is back and been a lot of fun. We've talked a lot about that. I don't think the art is as consistent as it should be, but the character writing in that book, Dan Slott, please don't write big cosmic villains anymore. You're terrible at it, sorry. But you're doing a very good job of touching on all the things that we want, all the emotion that we want out of the characters, and a very clever thing he did when the FF finally returns with, you know, another group sort of trying to fill the void of what the FF was. So it's about, which is a really interesting thing. The originals are back, so what does that say about the copies? Which is talking about art and comic companies that imitate each other, you know, and all kinds of things in a really interesting way. So far, I'd say a general success to the line, even though sales are not, and that's my last comment is about Uncanny X-Men. When I saw, after we saw CB and I saw how excited he was about the X-Men, I was convinced that by the fall, we were going to have the X-Men books that we wanted and needed to go out and sell. And so I think the biggest fail for me so far is the Uncanny X-Men relaunch. We're 5 issues into a 10-issue weekly, and this book's not very good. I mean, it's I want it to be good. Brad, you might like it more than me. It does play heavily off 90s nostalgia.
Yeah.
X-Man showed up. Apocalypse is in it. Multiple Man, all that. And I get that. I'm not even... I like it from that aspect, actually. I'm not the jaded, you know, anti-X-Man stuff that I was several years ago. I get why people would like it, but from the point of view of, like, a cultural shift of, like, going out and actually getting people to come back and read X-Men, it's just not... One of the things that X-Men... What attracted people to X-Men was not just the character, it was the artwork. And Marvel has clearly made a decision that they're not going to pay for artwork. And so you're just getting really poor quality artwork. There's just no two ways around it. It's not true on all books. There are some really well-drawn books, but a lot of books are just stuff they're hiring people off of DeviantArt or you know, places like that. And yeah, it's just not up to snuff. And that's one of the things. There are other things hurting that book. We can do a whole podcast on Uncanny X-Men. I'd be happy to, but I just am disappointed because I thought that was going to be something that would really help us. So, anyway, board game?
Yeah, so there are two more that I want to make sure I mention today or on the podcast here. And these ones actually came out in 2018. We'll hit one of them now, and hopefully we'll have enough time to get back to me. The Mind... Mm-hmm. The Mind is such an odd little thing because it's just a card game. It's like it's a deck of cards with numbers from 1 to 100. And then there's a couple of other ones to indicate what level you're on. And you have lives, basically chances to make mistakes, and these other shurikens. Still not entirely certain why they're shurikens, but who cares? It doesn't make a difference. But the whole concept of the game is you play it cooperatively, and you have a number of levels based on the number of players you're trying to get through. And at each level, every player gets that number of cards. So on level one, everybody has one card. And without speaking or giving any other real visual cue, you need to play them in numeric order. So you have to look at the card in your hand and try to decipher, okay, if I've got a 7, that's pretty low, so I'm going to wait maybe like a 2 count and see if anybody throws anything down. Otherwise, I'm going to put this down. And you try to play them that way. You just try to read each other with, like I said, you can't like give cues like, you know.
You can't wait. You can't tap the table 12 times. Nothing.
Yeah. And it's amazingly fun. It sounds like you can describe that to someone and they'll be like, you just sit there and stare at each other and then put cards down and it's like, but it's so much fun. I played that, so many rounds of that actually at Anime Fargo with a few friends, and people would come by the table we were playing and they would watch us play because it was so fascinating to watch us look at each other and possibly play cards in the right order, and those times where you put one down and then someone has the next number in sequence, and you somehow figured that out without really figuring it out, but you feel cool about yourself because you did it right. And it's super fun. It's like, what, $12, and you get so much enjoyment out of it. It's such a great game, such a simple concept, and just great.
Agreed.
Is it me again?
Yeah, the mind's fantastic. Very good.
Yeah.
All right, go.
Okay. I've kind of just jumped ahead and just to pick something different. And the reason I picked this is because I read issue 5 last night of the Magic Order, which is Mark Millar's, one of his latest books. And it's drawn by Olivia Coipel. And I've always liked Mark Millar's stuff, but it's been very like easy reading. There's not much substance to it, but just easy to good and enjoyable, easy to read. But this, I think, is kind of a better book. It stands above the others I've read. The Magic Order. It's about this family of magicians that kind of secret societies, and there's In a little bit like Watchmen, there's some kind of force that's like killing this family, these members of this family, and there's just the ideas of magic and the things that you can do with magic are very creative and imaginative, and the way they're drawn is just fantastic. So the reason it is sticking in my mind now is because there's a twist in the story, and it just totally threw me, and it's the book's even better for it. So it's just a beautiful book with great characters, and I know I keep saying that, but
it is. I've only read 2 issues. I don't know why, but it's spells that Darren's talking about, this is something that the book does really well. Like, on the surface, you think to yourself, like, okay, it's magicians, but they actually have magic, and they protect the world from magic. It sounds like I've heard this idea before, or whatever. But it's what brings it to life is the characters, I think. Like, and the art. The art's really good, right? But at the end of the first issue, they're trapped, and it's been a while since I read this, so I misstate this at all. Please forgive me.
No.
There's a couple of people that are in a house, and they're literally going to like make popcorn and watch a movie or something. I don't even remember, right? But they realize that they're trapped. They can't get out of the house and some spell, and they're worried about some spell. And they are actually overwritten by the spell. They no longer exist. The spell like rewrites their house, them, everything. They're gone. And there's no coming back from that, I'm assuming. Like,
not that I've read yet.
Yeah, they're just simply gone. And that, I don't know, that scene blew me away for some reason. Of just, like, wait, what just happened? Yeah. You know, like, because I thought I'm reading this comic about these characters, and nope, I'm not, you know. So I thought that was bold and exciting, and then in the second episode is about the high school student who is trying to develop their powers and be like, you know, and all that stuff. And it's just like, it was very compelling. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And this family, this main family that have like, you know, they guard this secret, this book that has spells in it that really they don't want anyone to know about. And this is what the story is about, this book. But the family is, you know, they're an interesting family. That there's tragedy in that family. There's an outcast in the family, and the way they interact is very interesting. One of the reasons I say it's like Watchmen is because there's a funeral scene, and I can't help but think of, the funeral of the comedian. I mean, it's not exactly the same, but I kind of got this same feeling.
It's actually kind of like that. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah.
You know, and
so that's at the beginning of number two, I think.
It's in issue one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but just the designs of the characters, the costumes. Mm-hmm. Which is, I say the costumes as though, like, you know, just...
No, but they are, but that's how good the artwork is. They are, like, costumes and not just drawings.
But, for me, this is like a one notch above the other books. I've always enjoyed his books, but this is just something special. And one thing to state is this is the first book. It's printed through Image, published through Image, but it's a Netflix. It's the first book he has written specifically when Miller World was purchased by Netflix. So this is likely going to be a TV show as well. So.
Yeah. Another thing, just a side note, when you go to a convention, fun things you can do are eat breakfast in the same room with Dan Didio and Mark Millar. So just kind of be like, well, I guess they're just people who've got to eat breakfast.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's skip pop culture. Let's do another board game.
Okay. So the last one I definitely want to bring up today is, you can't talk about 2018 tabletop board and card games without talking about Keyforge. I mean, it absolutely has to be up there.
Even I know what Keyforge is.
So Richard Garfield, who you might know from a little game called Magic the Gathering, as well as he's done plenty of other things, but clearly that's Magic has had a huge impact on the tabletop world, designed a game called Keyforge, and it's a card game, but it's not a collectible card game. It's not a trading card game. The big elevator pitch for it is that every deck is unique. There's, I think, 370 cards total, but when you buy a deck, you get 36 cards, 36 of those 370 cards in some combination with no more than four of a certain card in the deck, and that combination of cards is unique amongst anyone else's decks. So there is something like 4 quadrillion possible permutations of these 370 cards in a 36-card deck. It's possible you could find your exact deck, but one card is different, but that's the main idea behind it. And, of course, that goes back to Richard Garfield's big idea and intention for Magic the Gathering was not that it would be this big thing where people create, analyze all the cards and create the best decks, and then other people read those deck lists and go online and purchase all the cards and buy their deck. The idea was that you go and you buy some packs, and those are the cards you have, and you build a deck, and you play it the best you can. You get good at your deck. It's not that you play other people's decks. You play yours, and that's fairly unique. And, of course, we know where Magic is today, and nothing necessarily wrong with that. But Keyforge now really nails this idea by saying, you can't edit this deck. You can't buy two and put them together and take the cards out of this one you like and put them into this deck. Because every deck has a unique name. And the back of every deck has that name. The back of the cards have the name on it. And the names, God bless them, whoever decided to do this was brilliant and deserves a raise. The names are created by an algorithm. So you might have something as innocuous as Quadrifar, the Sentinel. But you might also have the boy who basically headbutts heaven. Or Richard the Mouthy, and I think that it's very close. I looked up your name, Rich, to see if there.
Oh, really?
And there are plenty like that, and it's so much fun because you pull it out there and it's like, ooh, I've got Dread Chill Fifi, and that's the first deck I got. I'm Fifi. I'm going to kill you with my Dread Chill. You know, it's so much fun and such a great concept. $10 for a deck. You know, there's a starter kit you can buy that has a couple decks in it and all the tokens because it's Fantasy Flight Games and they love their tokens. But you don't need to buy that. You can just go and buy a $10 deck and then have some method of keeping track of the things you need to keep track of, and you can play.
Lots to unpack there. One thing is, that's one thing is you still have a board game company trying to make a card game, and so you can kind of feel that, right, with like the tokens and the need for the $40 starter set that really isn't that necessary at 40, and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so that game, I mean, the game is mind bending. In I still have not wrapped my head around this idea that it's not a collectible card game. It's not a living card game. It's not a game that I can buy every card of simply by buying a box of something. You know, like, I can't do any of that. and what does that mean, though? Like, how does it become collectible? How does it work in the marketplace? And we're seeing a lot of that. We're like, there are cards called the Four Horsemen, and those cards in particular are the ones that are driving pricing so far. They're a unique four cards from one of the houses, and I've traded for two of the decks that have been opened around here just because it's like, if it is the alpha of the next Magic the Gathering, I mean, I want them. But at the same time, I can't collect all the decks and all the cards. Nope. Like, I can't do it, and that's what's so fascinating about the game, to say the least. Speaking of names, so I'm trying to plan two business trips next year, and they may have just twisted my arm into one of them. The Gamma Trade Show is in Reno, Nevada in March, I believe. Mm-hmm. Asmodee has made an exclusive deal that any retailer attending it gets a box of Keyforge decks with their store name in every deck name.
Really?
Yes. So I would walk home with 12 decks that would all have Paradox.
Oh, that's amazing.
In the name. I mean, that box alone might be worth the trip financially.
That would be amazing.
You know, like how freaking cool is that idea? Like, I don't know, man. Like, I want to go to Gamma anyway, but I'm not kidding that might be the reason that I go to Gamma. So, like, because a lot of times you get the exclusive, then they're like, that's an exclusive, but you know what I mean? Like, this is like really cool.
No, I would love to have a Paradox Keyforge deck. That would be amazing.
Anyway, I mean, but the game is changing. A lot of games come out. Not many games change the industry, and this is one of those ones that is in the process of somehow doing that. You know, it's like when deck builders first came out, so on and so forth. It's yet again we're at a moment in time of like we've talked about it on the podcast. I've asked people like Lance Meister, like, what would be new. You don't know until you know. You don't. Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing about it. And then you do know.
And it's interesting because I don't see this one getting copied very easily. Mm-mm. You know, like deck building happened. You know, Dominion is often cited as the father of deck building games. And now we have all sorts of variations on deck building. You know, here's this style. Here's games that have deck building in them, but they're not deck builders, and so on and so forth. But how do you have that uniqueness and carry that into other games? We're seeing Fantasy Flight does have another game, and I'm totally blanking on the name of it, but it has a little bit of that, where the game is functionally the same regardless of the components inside, but every box has a different combination of lands. It's basically like this exploration game that you can play, and if you pick it up, you might get desert and jungle or something, and those are the ones that you get to explore. The gameplay is still the same. It's not like if I have this game, my gameplay is completely different than yours, but there is that unique factor in that. So there are some ways that can be pushed into other games and other types of games, and it'll be interesting to see what other people do with that, especially if Keyforge continues to be as successful as it has been after its release.
Yep.
But yeah.
Okay. So, Darren, what do you got? Let's just kind of wrap up. Do you want to mention everything you did set out, or do you want to just
mention the title?
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
So, okay, so there was Isola, which I know we, if you go back, we did interview the writer Brendan Fletcher. Mr. Miracle, which we've talked about quite a bit, by Tom King.
I just want to say, there are, right now for me, there are two books in the 21st century that are currently the top two books that have been made so far, and I think it's Mr. Miracle and God Country. I think those are the best two comics of our century so far. And there are other ones that are probably, you know, very good comics as well, but I just think those works are really above everything else. Yeah.
Those are very, God Country at least. I haven't read Mr. Miracle yet, but...
God Country is just another. The rest of us are just screwing around, and then there's that guy, you know. And I mean, it's a movie, and he gets to write the movie script. I mean, it's just stupid how good that book is. So, all right, sorry.
Okay, that's okay. There's a trilogy called The Nameless City. The first volume is called The Nameless City by Faith Erin Hicks. That's a period adventure. That's highly recommended. This is in my all ages section. There's Oblivion Song by Robert Kirkman, Walking Dead, which is a fantastic fantasy story.
Yeah, we talked about that book a couple
of
times.
Yeah, we have talked about that as well.
I mean, it's so good. If you just want a kind of a cool high concept, but you'll be surprised at how much you'll care about the characters in the book.
Yes.
And what they've been able to do with it, we're 10 issues in, and the world is so open for storytelling in the future. So.
And the last one, and we just talked about God Country, is Thanos by Cates and Jeff Shaw, who created God Country. Thanos, by far my favorite Marvel book for a very long time, reminded me that Marvel can be great. And just a fun book. Cosmic Ghost Rider, one of my favorite new characters. Although I get this feeling that he's going to be what's the word?
Wow.
He's going to
be ruined. I mean, he's going to be overused,
oversaturated. From the announcements we read today.
Yeah,
so,
I think you're right.
I'll always have a fond memories of the original Thanos wins storyline where he's introduced, and the Cosmic Ghost Rider 5-issue miniseries as well, which kind of continues the story. So, yeah.
Marvel. Very much so. I think the Cosmic Ghost Rider, that was a great comic. It really was.
Yeah. So that was my 10 books for 2018.
I don't think you missed anything.
There was others, but...
Yeah. Well, and it's always... It's certainly not that we want to say that the other creators all sucked. These are the only 10 that were any good at all. So, Josh, what year did Gloomhaven come out?
That was 2017. Oh. It was on my list as a potential, but I think we talked about it last year. It's still worth mentioning. Gloomhaven is an amazing thing. It's one of those things that probably would not have ever existed if Kickstarter wasn't a thing, because I can't name the company that would be willing to take a risk on something of that scope. But it proves that maybe they should, because it's phenomenal. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. We got to interview the designer of that, as well as the gentleman who designed the expansion Forgotten Circles that is in pre-order right now. And we got it straight from the source that more copies are being produced and will be out soon. So anybody who's listening or viewing us, if you've been itching to get your hands on a copy of Gloomhaven, don't go and pay a scalper online. Be patient. They'll be out very soon. And I can't imagine that's going to go completely out of print for quite a while.
And I wanted to bring it up full circle, because you talked about Stuff Fables, and Jerry Hawthorne told us that they were looking at things as consumable. And here it's the exact opposite. You know, he was shocked that would be somebody's strategy.
Yeah.
Actually, like he.
Well, and it's funny because Gloomhaven is a scenario based game. If you play through it, you'll play the scenarios and you put stickers on the board. It has a legacy kind of component to it.
Yep.
You can buy a pack of reusable stickers so that you can play it over and over. But there's so much content in the game that you could play through it once, and by the time you've played through it, unless you're really into it and like play super consistently, there should be more expansions coming for you to pick up and consume.
Yep.
And there's even reasons to play through it again. You know, just the way that things are revealed, it's not the same way. You wouldn't play through it the same way every time.
I mean, think of one of the answers to one of my questions, which was, how do you make a game stand out when 5,000 games a year come out? You know, mm-hmm. And I don't know that he... I hope that he didn't think I was insulting him, you know, that was, do you know what I mean, though? Because I was a little worried about that. I was like, I just honestly wanted their answers, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, yeah, make a big-ass game that's different than everybody else's. You know what I mean? Like and the mind is different than everybody else's. It's a small-ass game, right? But, I mean, but that's the thing is we all know when a game stands out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it isn't... and with Gloomhaven, what was fascinating is, like, to him, the idea for the game was obvious, and everybody else was dumb for not having made it so far.
Right. Just like, how does this game not exist
yet? Yeah, yeah. So,
of course, the answer is that the size and scope of it, no one's going to take a chance on, or at least no one would pre-Gloomhaven.
Yep, and pre just given the publishing world as mm-hmm. it was. So, it's fascinating. And, I mean, it's... there are a lot of good games, and we only talked about 10 out of, like, 5,000. There are other, like, good games that came out. So one thing I'll say is I think about 3-4 years ago, Paradox would always have the best new games on the shelf first. We don't anymore. They tend to be on Kickstarter first for the most part, KeyForge being an exception, obviously.
Right.
But I will say this. People are doing a good job. Like, we have more new quality games on the shelf than we've had for years. Mm-hmm. We don't have an it game. Like, I remember the year the Sheriff of Nottingham came out. We sold in about a two-week period, so like 50 copies of that game. You can't really do that anymore as a game shop. There's too many game shops in town, and there's too many options to buy online. But I think overall, like, there's still the quality of games that are on the shelf is unrivaled. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And just the scope of, you know, you can find exactly the game for the type of game you want to play, you know? Even just 2 years ago, maybe not even that long ago, you could find something that was like, oh, okay, I like worker placement games, but I don't really like this aspect, but I guess this one will be good. I've heard it's good, you know? But now you can really narrow it down, and you can say, I want these three things in a board game. And it's like, okay, you want this, 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 or this, you know?
Yep.
So it's definitely this golden age of board gaming.
So product aside, and time is a little tight, but there's a final topic. So the number one thing that affected pop culture, nerd culture, and just about everybody last year in any form was the reverberation... the impact of the culture war as specifically seen through the lens of Star Wars.
Yes.
You know, last year it obviously came out in December of 17, but about 2 weeks before that. But the war went on for a long time afterwards. And I'd like us all to close out if we could, if you want to. If you don't want to, that's also fine, because wading into controversy is dangerous. But I do kind of want to hear everybody's, like, thoughts about this. I can kind of close with mine, too. But the hangover with it is also what happened with Solo in May. I still think there's a lot of reasons for this besides just the Last Jedi backlash. But the thing that's unfortunate, I think, about Solo is that for the first time ever, Star Wars was not special. And,
right.
And that to me is what's the saddest outcome. You can blame Kathleen Kennedy or Ryan Johnson or the fans. You can blame whatever you want. You can blame Ron Howard, or you can blame... I don't care what you blame. The end result was, at the end of the day, we had Star Wars that wasn't special.
Yeah.
And that should not happen. I mean, that's not... I mean, I don't like Rogue One very much. But even Rogue One didn't have that sense to me of, like, this doesn't matter anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Again, there's 1,000 reasons why that was the case, probably. But, yeah, in you know, too close to the other one, the fourth blockbuster in a row in a busy month, like, all kinds of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I'd love to just hear everybody's, you know, 2 cents worth on this, because I do think, without a doubt, it's the story of 2018 to me, so...
Mm-hmm. Who do you want to go first?
I don't know,
or do we fight each other?
Darren, you probably don't even want to speak.
Yeah, because what is the question? Is it the question?
How
do we feel about Last Jedi?
No, the question is, what do you think? What do you think Last Jedi's lasting impact was in terms of, you know, in terms of how fans split over it and how that's affected the, you know, the business or the store or pop culture, you know, or us or you, you know, or is it not something you
I'm grateful that we're still friends. Because we have different opinions of the movie. Well, you said something to me the other week about how you know how much you all the things that you listed a lot of nice things about me, and then you said, "But why is your favorite Star Wars movie Rogue One?" Yeah. I just don't get it. but no, I think I should just keep out of this conversation because I'm going to upset somebody. I enjoyed The Last Jedi.
There's no judgment here, so yeah. It just, I'm not interested in the movie itself. I'm interested in the the aftermath of the movie.
I think one of the things that that really, you know, a lot of people knew, but it really came out into the light with that is just how wrongly intense a fan base can be. And I don't just mean whether you liked it or not. That's not what I mean. I just mean the way that people approached their...
each other?
Well, yeah, each other. You know, all the backlash that happened with people... I'm forgetting the actor's name, but Rose.
Rose Tico.
Yeah, and how they just... uncompromisingly bashed her to the point of having to leave Instagram and whatever social media. You know, it's just that and people petitioning to have the movie remade and just this huge hissy fit that so many people threw. And not everybody who didn't like The Last Jedi. I'm not trying to put everybody into that camp because there are people who have very well rationed reasons for not liking it, and that's totally acceptable because there are a lot of reasons to not like it. I do understand, even though I ultimately enjoyed it. But just this isn't what I want culture, you know, and just the screaming... horrible face of that became so apparent. Like, and we've seen that to some degree with other things. You know, people go and they there's no endless amount of opinions on the internet, especially, but anywhere. But just how entitled people were and how childish they were about. Responding to the movie, it wasn't I'm disappointed that I didn't like this Star Wars or I'm angry I didn't like this Star Wars. It's this wasn't what I wanted. You owe me something. I didn't like your character. I'm going to yell at you. I'm going to tell you that you should die. I'm going to verbally assault you even though you had nothing to really do with it. It's just that ugliness that came out. And you know, that's the bad side of fandom that I would love to believe doesn't exist, you know, with as good as things are. And like you think about the way the comic shop used to be with the comic book guy from Simpsons, you know, sitting around just berating people for not knowing what happened in issue 31 on panel 4 and, you know, page 3. That stuff is going away. Like, we have a much more inclusive culture. And that's something that we've talked about here a lot, is community and the importance of community and it's okay to be you and that sort of a thing. And that's blossoming and that's fantastic. And there's this great acceptance of nerd culture, you know, in the world with people really getting into Game of Thrones and Doctor Who and everything else. It's acceptable to like these things now. But we still have... that part of the fan base, apparently, that cannot handle not getting what it wants and taking it out in very unhealthy ways. And I think that's something that really came through with that, like I said, we've seen it before. It existed before. I'm not saying that The Last Jedi was the only time, but the fact that it was that venomous, you know, I just...
Well, can I make a slight counterpoint?
Sure.
So, first of all, one thing, you know, listening to you, you basically just described the reaction to the 2016 presidential election from the other side also, though.
Well,
no, I mean, you did. Yeah, you know, no. Like, you, so it's not just that it's, like, one side, the other side, whatever, you know. This is apparently how we have a dialogue and interact with each other now, right?
Right. So, right.
But the other thing I think about Last Jedi, though, is Rian Johnson and was allowed to do this, and I compliment the fact they let someone make their own movie. I actually want that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do infuse a lot of politics into something that not everybody agrees with, then you do open the door in an age of social media, in an age of this, to complaining, you know. You know, there's a YouTube clip of Rian Johnson from like 2003 that says, "I want a movie where half the people walk out and hate it."
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay,
there you
congratulations,
go.
You know, like you did it, you know, and yeah, I mean, so I don't know. I mean, I agree with you, mm-hmm. but at the same time, there's a part of me that really understands the frustration leveled at the movie. I don't like the movie, not from that point of view. I don't like the movie because it sucks. It's badly made. It's badly written. It's stupid. It doesn't make sense. There's all kinds of things I can complain about about that movie. So.
Oh yeah, and we've had a whole podcast
yeah,
about it.
2.5 hours we talked about it. I think so.
Just to make sure I'm stating myself correctly here, yeah. I'm not saying you can't complain about it. I'm not saying that dissenting opinions are not welcome. Yep. You know, I'm not saying well, just take it and like it. It's a Star Wars, whatever.
Yeah.
But you didn't like the movie, and you're vocal about it, and unabashedly so, and that's fine. But you also didn't go out and say, this needs to be remade. You need to change this. I didn't like it. I want something different. Make it different for me now.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like your character. You should die. You didn't do that. You have opinions.
We don't know that.
Well, yeah. I'm assuming you didn't do that.
Yeah.
I'm assuming. But that's what I'm talking about, is just that attitude and how...
Yep.
Oh yeah.
No, and I think that's the point of the whole thing. Is Brad? What do you give me a final take here?
I totally get where Josh is coming from of the entitlement of believed ownership
mm-hmm.
of, you know, let's be honest. Like, most of the comic book characters that we're talking about were created 30s or the 60s. You know, anybody that's in any kind of current show, or, you know, movies, television. They're from then. So it's a generation of people that grew up where they already existed. Whereas 1977, we kind of got like the last modern, you know, American myth being written in Star Wars. So people have this ownership of it. And they feel like it needs to be theirs. It needs to be right. It needs to be correct. And it, you know, it can't be. And I think, like, you know, the way the two of you were talking is it went over. Like, I watch professional wrestling. I'll admit it's a male soap opera, but oh, God,
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
And you talk to any of the good performers, they don't need to be cheered. They just want a reaction.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe that's kind of what we're at, where it's like, sure, we have vehement hatred on one side, and we have people that, you know, try to defend it and, like, love it as a good film. But they're still getting a reaction. This isn't something that we've stopped talking about. This isn't a movie that just came and went, like, you know, let's be honest, every animated movie that is not Disney. Like, who's still talking about Ferdinand the Bull? Yes, I just generated that name, but still. You know, like, in 2 months, is anybody going to be talking about Smallfoot? These things are going to go away.
Right.
But the fact that the reaction is still happening... It also gives people a chance to go back and, like, all right, it's been 2 years since I've seen it, you know. I'm going to have a calm day. I'm not going to have any stimulants. I'm going to watch it again, see if my feelings are still there. Because, you know, just, like, I'll admit that there have been movies I've gone into where I had a horrible day before going to the movie, and that definitely clouds your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are people willing to rewatch something, to retry it? If not, you know, they've made their decision and that's fine, but everything deserves a second viewing.
I just think at the end of the day, it's always bad for business. I mean, you know, like, I think of everything from a money-making point of view, and I just think, why would you want half your audience to not want to buy your Blu-ray and action figures? You know, that's what it comes back to for me, and I know that that's just too, you know, clinical about it, right?
Yep.
But that's still, I mean, because I'm here to make money, and I can go home and have my politics. I don't need to tell you my politics, right? That's my business, right? But you come to Paradox because you want a safe place to buy, no matter what you think, no matter what you believe in, no matter who you are. And that's what I think, you know, that's what, when we cross these lines, you know, yeah, I mean, you're going to outrage people. And when you tap in, when you're willing to dive into the culture war, and Marvel Comics was, and Star Wars was, and things like that, this is what's going to happen, and we all know that now, right? Like, that's something that's now a known quantity in the world. So, but yeah, I don't know. Outrage culture is certainly an interesting thing, to put it mildly.
It's in and popular to be a dissenter. I mean, sure, we could have a 50-50 split on Star Wars, you know, The Last Jedi, and Solo. But I still think it's the vocal minority that are the vitriol ones, that are just, they're the complainers, and they get seen the most.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I think that's, you know, it's...
It's true, yeah. But when you see that low Rotten Tomatoes audience score, though, I mean, that is not a vitriol few people, you know, and I do think, I bet that score is more reflective of a dissatisfaction with the quality of the movie than it is with the politics of the movie.
Sure.
Because the vitriolic group is small. You're absolutely correct, right? And so you get down to that 50%-ish mark or whatever. I don't know what it is today, right? But
yeah.
It was pushing that. It was like, at the time, it was the lowest rated audience score for any Star Wars movie, at least when we were talking about it at the podcast last year. You know, I don't think that is just all politics. I think that is a lot more about the things I'm talking about the movie. So... You guys are right. Like, it is, you know, Brad makes a good point. It's generational. Things change. And they have to. They have to evolve, and they have to appeal to different people, and that's totally correct. You don't have to crap on the people that were there before and bought your franchise as far as they did. You don't have to make Thor unworthy in order to have a female Thor. You don't have to make Luke Skywalker an attempted murderer in order to make Rey a good character. That is the bottom line of it for me. And I think for a lot of people who just have sort of stepped back from it, then, like, okay, well, if that's what you're going to do, then, you know, I will take my money elsewhere. You know, well, seriously, you know, I'll take my time, my money, something else.
Well, what about all the innocents he killed on the first Death Star?
Yeah, true.
Well, and that's part of it. I know this is a whole big thing, but if you had a problem, you know, The Force Awakens took our beloved characters and basically said they all failed. You have to either buy that or not, you know. But your mic ran out of batteries, Rich, so I've been moving mine back and forth. I think that means we need to wrap it up.
It is. No, we definitely, let's end anyway. We could go on about Star Wars for a bajillion years anyway, and so, like, yeah.
So. All right.
That's 2018, everybody.
Nothing else happened in the year that's of any merit. No, seriously, if there's something we missed that high up on your radar that we did not touch on, let us know. Come find us on the internet. Of course, we've got our Facebook page, Paradox Comics and Cards, ParadoxCNC.com. We're on Instagram and Twitter, at ParadoxCNC. You know, you're sensing a theme there. And, of course, we're on Twitch.tv/ParadoxCNC for these podcasting sessions and more. We have a lot of stuff coming up in 2019 that's some more content for you, which will be very exciting. So stay tuned. We hope you had a good year. We're looking forward to 2019, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of what we're looking forward to coming up in the next year very soon. But until then, we will see you on the DoxCast.
Peace!
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time.